Welcome to the Katakalan Project on Katakalan Media. I'm your host, Che Ting Ye. After 24 days, student demonstrators who stormed and occupied Taiwan's parliament have finally vacated the building on Thursday, April 10th. Throughout this extraordinary several weeks, we have seen soapbox speeches, sit-ins, a public showdown between a student and the sitting prime minister, riot police beating demonstrators on the street, a gangster-led political party, and a rally that has a conservative estimate of 200,000 attendees. Not to mention countless sleepless hours for many in Taiwan and abroad, sharing things on Facebook, debating one another, watching online live streams. The impetus for this historical event was controversy surrounding a services trade agreement with China and the process through which the current administration wants to ratify this agreement. In terms of policy changes, for all their effort, they got a promise from the Speaker of the Parliament that the Parliament will take up some form of a law to oversee future dealings with China. But perhaps more importantly, this movement is about a rising trend of anxiety and discontent in a new generation of Taiwanese political citizens, and how this generation became a force in Taiwan's political discourse. I asked a longtime friend, Xu Qingfang, about this paradigm-shifting development in Taiwan. I had the privilege of endorsing her when she ran for National Taiwan University's student president, and, well, she did win at the end. She was then involved in the Wild Strawberry student movement in 2008, rallying the crowds through late-night speeches. After graduating with a law degree, she moved on to University of Chicago, UC Berkeley, and now at University of Toronto, studying social sciences and politics. So, Qingfang, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, many people, and including yourself, talked about this sunflower movement as really about a new political generation in Taiwan. So, what is this, how would you define this new political generation?
So, I think we're referring to the young people who participated in this Occupy Parliament movement and were inspired to take political actions. And let me give you a little bit about something about our backgrounds. So these people, including myself, we were born in the 1980s and grew up in a democratized Taiwanese society. And this time period is rather special because, one, democratic practice is a default setting for us for political life. And two, we've experienced and witnessed DPP's rise and mainly its fall. So we're not easily mobilized by traditional identity methods that appeal to, you know, hatred of KMT. And at the same time, our socioeconomic background enabled us to have the material base that led to this strong sense of self-determining, like I'm the master of my life, and you know, individuals have the strengths and capacity to change the environment. And also the history, like the education we get, history, geography, education we received, they were pretty Taiwan-centered, which led to this very strong Taiwanese identity that we perceive the world from a Taiwanese perspective, and we interact with the world as a Taiwanese. So with these structural conditions, the critical juncture appeared after 2008. So 2008, you know, that was the time that the Ma administration that came into power. And as you know, most of us, we know, a series of incidents initiated by the Ma administration directly challenged our understanding and beliefs of democracy. So Wild Strawberry Movement, that was the first one. And for that's the first encounter for us, you know, to confront with this state violence and, you know, infringement of human rights, democratic practice. And then in the past 5 years, starting from 2008, many issues of social justice have formed and consolidated this network of young men. So to name but a few, you know, Guo Guangshihua, Da Pu, Du Shi Gengxin, Shilin Wangjia, Hua Guang, and also the nuclear, the fourth nuclear plant. And yeah, just a lot. And Miao Li, you know, series of incidents. So these young men, we actually collaborated closely with many NGOs. So in a way, the Sunflower Movement is a collaborative presentation of various operations in the past few years. So it does not come out of nowhere. It's actually, it has a deep root in the society beforehand. And it is with this root that extensive mobilization is possible. And so that is how we see this, you know, generation.
I see. So this, what started maybe as a small group of students getting involved in various social injustices that they saw and then trying to do something about it with either protests or actions or petitions and working with NGOs. And that gradually led up to what we saw on March 30th with 200 or even 500,000 people on the streets, mostly young people. And I think reading your one of your blog posts about this generation, you talk about having, you know, people having a definite I guess moment where they become enlightened or they sort of open their eyes, right? And so you were directly involved in the Wild Strawberry Movement. Can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like for you, how that changed you, and what is that change that takes somebody from, oh, I think these are injustices, these are something that's bad, to I want to be actively, I'm part of that now. So how does that change happen?
There are two things I can mention to answer that question. So the first one is that Wild Strawberry Movement for me, or Sunflower Movement for a lot of people back home right now, that would be the first encounter with this state violence. Like when you realize that the institution, the operation, the logic of this system, this institution, is actually in favor of the interests of the ruler, but not in favor of people's will. That is really an enlightenment moment that you see. You know, you nowadays, from now on, you know the border of your imagined community. So you have the people here with you, with, you know, me, and you have the ruler there with all the police, all the, you know, press. That would be the first thing we could conceptualize our experience. The second thing is that you will experience this huge social force being so supportive and, you know, courageous. Like, I could give you one story. So back in the Wild Strawberry Movement, I have a friend who has been, you know, taking care of, you know, the, you know, material, the water, and, you know, whatever people bring to the movement. And he's taking care of that. And one night, he was like, you know, it's November, it's rainy, it's cold. And an old couple, they showed up and they brought, you know, their comforter, you know, those, you know, red with big flowers on that kind of comforter. And they were like, I really, you know, they came all the way from Xinjiang, you know, it was a long drive. And they're like, this comforter was a gift from our wedding. And it is very important to us. And because it is so important to us, so I want you guys to have it, you know, with our, you know, blessings and with all the, you know, all the good things that happened to us, we want you to have our comforter. And, you know, my friend, it's like, you know, we don't need a comforter. And especially, it's really hard to deal with a comforter when it's raining and cold. I mean, you know, the comforter will get wet and it's just hard to deal with. And so he wanted to, you know, reject that, you know, their goodwill. But the old couple just, you know, put down the comforter and just ran away. They really, really want us to have it. And so this type of story happens all the time in this kind of movement. It's like, we should know that every political action or every social movement has to have a social base. And from this type of support, you know clearly that you are with the people. You have the legitimacy. Even though your action might not be legal, but you do have the legitimacy. You are legitimate. And your legitimacy comes from these people, these citizens' contribution, their hope, and their expectation. And so these are two aspects that I was seriously inspired when I was participating in Wild Strawberry Movement. And this kind of experience is, I would say, is consistent with the experience that other people, other participants in this movement, Sunflower movement, what they've experienced.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me of a similar story I saw somewhere about there's a old, I think, old grandfather from, you know, he just came to, he went around to the different clusters of protesters sitting in around the streets of the parliament and basically, you know, bowed to the students and said, I really admire what you guys are doing. And it's sort of something like that, right? So there's not only are we talking about the students or the people that are actually sitting in or taking their time to go to these rallies and, yeah, and sit-ins, but the circle of people outside that's maybe not there physically, but supporting them, right? And as you said, that kind of creates this imagined community where everyone is connected, even though they don't know each other personally, but they're connected through maybe a shared, yeah, vision or a shared, you know, they feel like they're compatriots, or they feel like they're supporters of the same cause.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it has been 23 days and a lot of things are going on outside of legislative yuan, right? And someone described that as a feast of democracy. And I think that's absolutely correct. It's like you have this, you know, all types of talks, you know, discussions going on. People go there and they have, like, interact with each other. They understand each other. They're trying to form a communal vision of what the country should be like. And that part, that's, I guess that's a core element of democracy, what democracy should be about. It's about, you know, people come together and form a communal vision of the country.
Yeah, and I mean, sadly, I don't think that has been covered pretty much at all in any of the media. I mean, I guess the other thing is, I mean, we're talking about people who were there, but now we're also talking about, you know, the people that you think of when you associate the movement, you know, the people like Chen Weiting or Lin Feifan or Wei Yang, or sort of the people that, you know, the news media kind of goes after. But they've been doing this for a long time, you know, since at least a few years ago, right? During Wild Strawberry, and then, as you said, through Media Monopoly, to Dapu, to Silin Wang Jian, all these cases of social injustice that they saw. I mean, and I remember somebody said, you know, 6 months ago, even when they went to protest the very same cross strait services trade agreement, there weren't that many people there. So why, what's different this time? Why did this particular instance attract so many people, attract so much attention, jammed up all of the airwaves on TV, on Facebook? What do you think, there's something different about this time that we see this many people come out?
Honestly, I don't think this time is that different. Like, it's not different in a qualitative sense. It's the same administration we're dealing with. It's the same, like, pro-China policy we're dealing with. The only difference is that, let me rephrase my argument. I think this type of, you know, large scale movement would happen at some point. It just, we don't know when this would happen. It's like, you know, the revolution is coming. You don't know when it will come. And what triggers, so a better question I might ask is that, what triggers young people to, you know, to be involved this time? So the first thing, there are two things we could observe. I think the first thing is that definitely Zhang Qingzhong, the 32nd, you just pass agreement, that would be, it's just too ridiculous in a common sense. It's, everybody understands that it's just not acceptable. And the second thing is that occupying parliament is something novel and actually doable, even though they weren't that many people in the first place on the 18th. And so, and it was pretty, you know, inspiring, right? It just, you go in there and you block the doors and you spread the message out. You know, they have like online live show like right away. So it's just, it's easy. So the two elements, how this movement was triggered. First one is, it's so ridiculous that everybody understands. Second, it's rather interesting and understandable why people want to occupy Parliament. So it's something, the message is, it's easy for the message to get out. It is pretty understandable, it's predictable that this type of large-scale movement will happen at some point in the second term of President Ma.
Yeah, and I hear a lot of people say, oh, my daughter, you know, my teenage daughter never talks to me about politics, never watches TV, never listens to the news. And then all of a sudden, she knows every single market sector in the appendix of the services trade agreement. Like, you know, she memorized it all and she could say, you know, this is not good and that's not good. And other people say, you know, all these people who used to, you know, just sit in cafes or, you know, they would talk about shopping and things like that. I mean, now they're, you know, passing, writing articles, writing blog posts, you know, going on message boards and arguing with each other. And that's all very nice and awesome. And I guess to me, at least, that it seems like there's a new raw sort of this political energy, all these new, this new generation of people that's going to be around for a long time. And they're all sort of turned on to politics. They're all concerned about the future of their country. Where do they go next? What, you know, now that the students have left the parliament, and I'm assuming the media attention is not going to be on them so much anymore, what do these new generation of people, not just the people who went to the rallies, but the people who are now watching politics, you know, do they go back to the KMT, the DPP? Do they go back to following the same stories that have always been on the news? Or is there something else that might happen?
Okay, I guess, yeah, we do see this critical mass emerged in this, you know, in the past 23 days. And I guess I have two points to make. So the first one is, how do we evaluate this critical mass? The first one is that if we want to observe this from elections, honestly, I don't think a lot of things has been, you know, changed. Especially, you could see this from the conflict between a lot of young men and their families, right? It's like you see, you hear from people saying that, oh, I can't communicate with my parents. They're kicking me out, and they just don't understand like how bad the situation is. They just support, they just vote for the KMT no matter what. And so you could see from this observation that not that many KMT supporters have changed their minds. They've just been silent, and that tells us something. So many, you know, cosmopolitan voters in Taipei, they refuse to see how the Ma administration, they are collaborating with China, where at least their policies are consistent with the Chinese unification political agenda. So that is not so optimistic. The second point is that if you want to see evaluate this critical mass from a generational perspective, I think we're doing pretty well. And because, you know, not just my generation, also like the younger generation, right? It's like people in high school right now. And people will grow up, you know, and we have like 2 years if we want to evaluate this from a presidential elections perspective. These people would be the main force in the next 2 years. But we still have to go back to the question, how do you channel this critical mass into the political arena? So the social force would definitely keep pressuring the political departments. But in the political arena, you still need team members to fight the battles, right? Because after all, that would be the most direct way to block, this pro-China policy or to change this economic policy that is in favor of politicians and entrepreneurs. That would be the most direct battle you have to have people to fight. And our critical mass, our generation is young. We have a lot of potentials. But in the next 2 years, we don't really know how we could play our role well, and what would be the channels, what would be the battles, what would be the arenas we have to pay attention to, and how we're going to fight our battles. That's something we have to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and I mean, I think right now, I personally think it's a little too early to say what will come of this energy. I mean, we can certainly talk about what we think should happen to this political energy. And as you said, I don't really think they will necessarily go back to the same. They definitely don't seem to want politics as usual, right? Or as it used to be, right? So how can we expect the current politicians right now to change, to offer them something new? I don't know. I mean, there's definitely talks about, you know, possibility of new political parties coming up, of new civil groups coming up to pressure the politics. I mean, it seems to me that no matter what happens, this generation, so our generation, and maybe, as you said, the people in high school, you know, we need to basically answer the big questions answering Taiwan's future, right? So as I think Wei Yang said also in his panel in Washington, D.C. yesterday, how do we face this unholy trinity of what to do with the government system in Taiwan, plus what do we do with China, and plus what do we do with globalization and free trade and, you know, basically this, fair capitalism? You know, right now, at least to me, it seems that the Ma administration, their stance is, you know, let's work with China to go further down the path of liberalized free trade, right? And so is that what is best for Taiwan, or is that at least what the Taiwanese people want? I'm not sure, but how do you think our generation will, you know, go about tackling this question?
Obviously, I don't know. Right? It's just, if we know the answer, we don't have to have this interview, right? We could just go ahead and, you know, tackle the issue like right away, right? So obviously, so the short answer to that question is we don't know, and, you know, nobody would know at present. But some procedural observations could be made. One is that at least it is good to realize there's an issue. You know, if you're doing research, the most crucial part is, you know, you have to ask a right question. You have to ask a good question. And so it is already stunning that people in our age, you know, 20-something, in the case of Wei Yang, how old is he? He's like 22, 23, definitely less than 25, right? A young man who's 25.
We can ask him next week when he comes here.
Right. So, like, a young man who's, like, 25 years old is already able to, you know, identify that the enemy we're tackling, you know, this unholy trinity of governance plus China plus globalized capitalism. It's already some accomplishment. And okay, so now at a very early stage, we have this question of, you know, the topic of question. The second thing we could see is that we do have a very diverse population. Like, people do have different opinions on what do we do with, for example, free trade. Is trade really free? And pretty early in this movement, a lot of people, at least some friends of mine, were actually debating on the issue whether is it possible that I actually support free trade, but I'm against this democratic procedure. So, you know, that would be two layers of questions. So I'm pro trade, like I'm okay with globalization, globalized capitalism, but I disagree with how the government is handling that. Is that still consistent? And so at least these two questions, you will get like four types of people, right? So it is pretty interesting to see how people understand as, you know, an issue, but they share something in common, but they do not share everything in common. So my point is really, first, it is good that it is extremely, you know, surprising, and it's definitely a good thing that people start to recognize this issue early on in our age. in our days. And the second thing is that people do have diverse experience. So the next thing we would do is that we'll start have, you know, debates, and we will start have, you know, different routes of, you know, different actions tackling, you know, different aspects of this issue. And it is perfectly okay that people have different, you know, ways, actions, or ideas, opinions of this unholy trinity, because that is exactly how a civil society is formed. You know, a civil society is not formed by a unity of people who share everything in common. It is established by a lot of people who disagree with each other, and by disagreement, we have the strength to check state power. So, like, I don't know how my generation will answer to that question, but I think we should recognize and appreciate our ability to start thinking about this and trying to express a willingness to tackle this question at this stage.
It at least seems to me that the services trade agreement was just the beginning of seeing these three questions kind of come together in the same controversy. And so, and I think I totally agree that it's impressive, and it's also optimistic in the sense that people in our generation are now know that this is the question that we face, I think. And just how do you think, I mean, these people, a lot of them, you know, people that we're personally friends with, I mean, they were in there for like 24 days. Yeah, like how is it possible that they resolve, you know, they have that resolve to stay there for so long, and, you know, even being branded as criminals or violent, or, you know, people say that they're like controlled by the DPP, or they're, you know, just being used by politicians. I mean, I can't imagine that kind of psychological, that kind of emotional stress.
I visited Chen Weiting in Qingda like once, and we were actually talking about, he was like a junior then, and you know, as a junior, he starts to think about what he's gonna do after college, right? And so we're saying that, yeah, so before you graduate, make sure that you do something, you do a 代表作, like you do something that is really grand, that could represent, you know, your days, right? Your college days, right?
Yeah, and have a masterpiece, right? Like,
right, you have to have a masterpiece. And he's like, yeah, I really should think about this. Yeah, I should really think about this. And then this movement just happened. I mean, we have, like, every one of us, like everyone, every student activist in the network, we're willing to contribute something. And everyone has different route, everyone has different destiny. And I believe Chen Weiting and Lin Feifan, they did not take up the job, the responsibility, like 100% voluntarily. They happened to be there. They had some reputation beforehand, and they have some good leadership. They're charismatic leaders. And so people just chose them, and you have to, at the time, you have to be courageous enough to take up the responsibility. And so, and after you take up that role, you're not fighting alone. It just, it happens to be you standing in front of the camera, like talking to people and experiencing all the stress. But you're not fighting alone. Everyone's with you. It just happens to be you standing in front of camera. So it's just, I think that would be very stressful. They'll be like, it has been, it, I don't know, it's just, I truly, truly appreciate their hard work, and you know, it's just psychologically, it was a very difficult time. It is a very difficult time. It will be a very difficult time from now on. But yeah, you have a community, and that's your role in the community, and you're not fighting alone. You're with a community. And so, yeah, I guess that's how I would deal with it, and that's how I think they're dealing with this.
Yeah, and I mean, I would totally think that if this doesn't count as their masterpiece, I don't know what will.
Really?
So again, thanks so much, Qingfang, for joining us today.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Katagalan Project on Katagalan Media. Find this on our website at katagalanmedia.com, that's K-E-T-A-G-A-L-A-N Media. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Katagalan Media. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time.